Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. It's my pleasure today to welcome Tim Fiore. Tim is Chairman of the Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Business Survey Committee. In his day job, Tim is a Senior Vice President and Chief Procurement Officer for Ryder System down in Florida. Tim is an authority on the ins and outs of manufacturing and has been a good friend to logistics management and the Peerless Media supply chain over the years. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. You're too kind.
Well, it's great to have you. Just to get the ball rolling here, Tim, obviously these are really uncertain and unusual times. And with that as a bit of a backdrop, it sort of goes without saying that the manufacturing sector has been severely impacted in many ways due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. I'm wondering if maybe we could do a before and after type of thing, Tim, if you could maybe offer up an assessment of how things were going on the manufacturing front prior to COVID truly kicking in, and now, say, over the last 8 to 10 weeks, as we've all been sort of part of this unusual new world.
Right. So the activity really started, for the year, obviously, January, February, March, for the benefit of your listeners. So the PMI is it's a collection of information provided by hundreds of companies around the U.S. that support U.S. manufacturing, do U.S. manufacturing. We get input from 18 different industry sectors, and they report at the end of the month for that month's activity. And we measure. The PMI is a composite of five sub-indexes, new orders, production, employment, supplier deliveries, and inventories. And there's also five other sub-indexes that don't go into the PMI but are very valuable to me: customer inventories, prices, backlog of orders, new export orders, and imports. So the other thing that we also do is we have a non-manufacturing index. Anthony Nieves reports on that. I'm the spokesperson for the manufacturing index. And throughout the year, we also do two forecasts. We do a forecast in December for the following year, and we look back at the prior year, and then we do an update in May. So in the last couple of months, we've gone through the virus impact, dramatic changes in the PMI number month to month. I think the number that came out at the end of April was pretty accurate for what was happening. And we also collected the update forecast for the balance of 2020, which was really, really interesting. And so, I mean, March was a transition month, I would say. We ended up with a PMI of about 49.1. The 50 point is the break point. That essentially says that everything is the same compared to the prior month. So if you have a number higher than 50, it means you're expanding. Number lower than 50, it means you're contracting. We had a 49.1 because the rate of change was so dramatic that we collect our respondents' comments at the tail end of the month. And throughout that month, everything felt different. And I would say on the 31st of March, it felt like we were still falling off a cliff. So the 49.1, I don't really think was that accurate. It was probably accurate for the whole month of March, but not for the last day of March. Mm-hmm. Then we went into April. And April, I think, was a steady decline. We understood which industry sectors were going to be impacted. There weren't a lot of surprises. People were essentially quarantined at home. Social distancing was deployed. The need for masks was clear. And I think in the month of April, I would say that we could see the bottom of the hill. We weren't quite there yet, but we could see the bottom of the hill. We had a PMI of 41.6. So to kind of put it in this perspective, the Great Recession that we had about a year's worth of under 50 numbers, of which about 9 months of those were under 40. So we're now sitting at a 41.6 going into May, and we're probably, about 10 days away from the next update.
Okay. All right. And then, so when we talk about the PMI, Tim, I know over the years we've had the real privilege or benefit of talking about some really strong numbers. Obviously, that's not the case now. Can you just sort of, and I know you had mentioned some of them, for example, new orders, employment, business activity and production. I know that new orders is often considered the engine that drives manufacturing, if you will, and it's obviously largely based on demand, which appears to be in somewhat short order right now. When you look at the April data and you talk about the PMI coming in, I believe you said 41.9, when we look at sort of the key metrics comprising the PMI, and you can jump over to the input side too, what are some of the ones that jump out the most or that people within supply chain, freight, transportation, and logistics should be really taking a especially close look at?
Well, interesting. So the month of April, we had a new order index that came in at 27.1. That's like the lowest level that we've had in 40 years. On the employment side, we had a 27.5, which was the lowest level since we actually provided quantifiable data in 1948. And we had a production number of 27.5. All of those were off 15, 20, 16 points from the prior month. So there's no real surprise. I mean, people went home. They were working from home. But nobody was really placing orders because they really didn't know when they wanted delivery anyway. Nobody really understood what the forecast was going to be going forward. I think we're going to see some recovery in May on that. And, you know, many of the factories, even the essential factories, they're partially closed and are fully closed. So the production number was no big surprise. And as you saw in the initial jobless claims, we ended up with 35 million people on the unemployment rolls. So you would expect the employment number to be down too. So these are record numbers from the standpoint of the rate of change. If you go into the PMI report, which is available on the ISM website, you'll see that some of the dates that we noted in there are 1955, 1972. Incredible rates of change. But like I said, you know, I think May is going to be a bit more stable. I think May is going to step back up a little bit. You know, people are returning to work. Employment numbers should go up. Production is starting to start. So I would think that number is going to step up too. And I think supplier deliveries, which is very high, the highest it has been since 1972 at 76. I think you're going to see that ease a little bit because suppliers are going to be delivering at a much slower rate. And I think from that standpoint, they're going to be able to catch up to the input supply chain.
Okay. Yeah. And as you said, a lot of these numbers, when you look at when they were at these comparable levels, it truly are in many cases from decades ago. So it really helps to put the current situation into even clearer perspective.
So I'm fortunate, Jeff, because I do two jobs, right? This is a volunteer job, and my job, my regular job, I get to communicate with a lot of people. So the way I really look at this data is I take all 10 of these sub-indexes and I put them into demand, consumption, and inputs. And
Yes. There's
no doubt that in the month of March, we had a demand issue for sure. In the month of April, we're transitioning to more of an input issue. And I think as we go through May, it's going to be an input issue too. So the demand side is really new orders, and that number goes right into the PMI. It also includes customer inventories, which at the present are the highest that they've been in quite some time. It includes backlog of orders, which is down in the 37 range, which is the lowest it has been in a long time. So, and it also includes the new export orders, which goes, I think, directly into the new order number, and that's at a 35.3. So, and I think that pretty much reflects the fact that people really weren't planning for the future. They were just kind of putting their hands over their head and kind of ducking. So, you know, the demand side, I think we're going to see some bounce back in May. The consumption side, I define that as production and employment. So you have input materials, they're consumed by the factory and people, and they're outputted into revenue and sales. And then, you know, I look at the input side, which is really supplier deliveries and inventories, as well as imports. And prices have some impact on the whole activity. So I think we're really transitioning to an input-driven phase change here in the PMI. And I think the reason for that is that factories are up and they're still struggling to get material. Generally, suppliers are usually smaller than the main company that they deal with. Maybe don't have as many resources as the main company that replies to the survey. And I think we're going to have a couple of months here of input-driven restrictions on the growth of the PMI.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. One thing I wanted to address, and it's kind of gotten a lot lost in the shuffle amid COVID-19, has been related to the ongoing trade war, Tim, between the U.S. and China. And I just was interested to see how you would describe the current status of the trade war as it relates to manufacturing at the moment. I mean, just because COVID-19 is kind of everywhere news-wise and at top of mind for pretty much all of us, doesn't mean that tariffs still aren't out there and things along those lines. And I'm just wondering if you could shed a little light on what's happening on that front.
Sure. So tariffs was probably the top issue for the manufacturing community for, you know, the better part of 2 years. And I was tracking comments and I was splitting them up between tariff and non-tariff related. And at the peak, in our general survey comments that come in every month, at one point, almost half the comments were tariff related. But, you know, keep in mind that the tariff was really a financial issue. It wasn't a supply assurance issue. So as we closed on the year, the tariff activity was kind of understood and accepted. The amount of tariffs that were still being applied primarily to Chinese goods, which were the biggest hotspot, were priced in, valued in, absorbed, passed on to clients and whatever. And we got to maybe a low teens number in terms of comments around tariffs. Mm-hmm. Once the virus started in March, no comments on tariffs. So, but that's what's really great here about monitoring the manufacturing economy, because you can see in the last couple of weeks, tariffs are coming back, but it's not really so much a tariff issue. It's a, I would call it a globalistic approach to our relationship with China, of which tariffs are an element of that. You can see by what's happening in the media that there's clearly a larger strategy at play here. This isn't just about bringing jobs back to America. And I think that as that evolves, we'll see what that does to the supply chains in China. I also think, though, that the virus kind of verified that these extended supply chains offer a potential, a significant amount of risk to U.S. manufacturing, whereas the tariff issue was a financial issue, like I said, the virus issue was an access issue. And the two of those combined are absolutely going to factor into anybody's supply chain design. And I would be very surprised if we don't start moving off a 100% supply contract for a specific item coming out of China to something where you're going to have at least dual sources of a significant quantity in the 50-50 range, because nobody can deal with what's coming here, I think, with the long-term relationship that's developing now with China. And, you know, we've got the election coming too. We're going to be trying to manage through the virus here as we close on the year. In the middle of that, we're going to have an election. And whoever gets elected, you know that things are going to change either way. If the incumbent gets elected, things are going to change. And if the party turns over, things are going to change too. So it's a really great time to be in manufacturing. And, I think our update on the forecast for 2020, the balance of 2020, kind of provided a good indication of what is in store for manufacturing throughout the rest of the year.
Okay, and that's a nice segue, Tim, and we can wrap up with this question. Let's talk a bit about the semi-annual economic forecast on the manufacturing front, because obviously the things that are measured in that report are somewhat different than the regular monthly PMIs. And I'm talking about things like revenue expectations, CapEx, capacity utilization, things like that. What are some of the big ticket takeaways from that report, which was issued last Friday?
Right. So we do a full forecast and we do an estimated actual in the December timeframe for this in that year. So in December, we look back at 2019 and we did some analysis of what we think we actually accomplished in terms of, you know, significant outputs and expenses and hiring and labor costs. And then so we do that for the 2019 year to do an estimated actual. Then we look forward to the 2020 year. And we do a prediction across all of those other subcategories. In the May timeframe, we look at six. We look at revenues, expected revenues by our panel companies, the CapEx expense that they plan on spending for the balance of the year, the employment levels compared to 2019, the price structures of the purchased materials that they purchase and what that will look like at end of year, operating rate. What are they actually able to produce compared to a theoretical 100, and the expansion of production capacity. So the three that I find really interesting were revenues, CapEx, and employment. So we forecast in December 19 that we would see manufacturing expansion at a 4.8% growth in 2020, which was up from a 1.9% growth in 2019. Now we think we're going to see a contraction of a 10.3%. But, I think that's a positive number, because if you ask people where they were in April, that number is probably more like 25% contraction. So that kind of reflects the fact that companies are going to come back up. They're not going to come back up at Q4 2019 levels. It's going to take some time to get there, but they're going to come back up nonetheless and work through the social distancing issues that are now prevalent on the factory floor. On the CapEx side, in December 19, we predicted a 2.1% decline in CapEx, capital expenditures, compared to a 6.4% growth in 2019. So we clearly thought we're going to contract a little bit, but not that alarming. CapEx is a multi-year kind of activity, and now we think we're going to contract by 19.1%. So that's a pretty big throttle back in CapEx expenses for the balance of the year. You know, things probably started in March, but they're going to continue to be very careful about where they spend their money. And it probably has a lot to do with cash flow metrics that everybody's trying to manage, given the liquidity issues that hit the market in March and April. And the third one is really the employment number. So in December, we thought employment would essentially be flat to 2019. In 2019, we thought we expanded 0.6%. And now we think by the end of the year, we're going to contract 5.3%. So, but I think if you ask people what are their employment levels in the month of April, again, they would have probably said 25-30% less. So I think that supports the fact that we're going to be growing out of the decline that we're probably going to see. We saw in April, probably sit there in May, maybe June, and sometime in probably late Q3, Q4, we'll start to kind of climb out of this, assuming no double bounce and assuming that we don't have a bad flu season, I think.
Okay. All right. All very interesting and informative. Well, Tim, that's about all our time for today. On behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer you up a big thank you to you for spending some time with us today. So thank you very much.
Oh, glad to help out. I hope your readers, your listeners get some value out of this.
Absolutely. Thanks. And to our listeners, please be sure to check out this podcast and all our others at the Supply Chain 24/7 podcast subscription site on any available area where you do get your podcasts. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day.